Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I typically interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 123 with Dr. Dan Libby, who's created a free resource for veterans that I think everyone will benefit from hearing about today.
And again, I think all of these practices, if we drill down to what's actually happening with them, it is just a shift in your nervous system. And it's about just being able to connect the mind and the body and the breath via this system in your body that is designed to help you succeed and to live in line with your values and goals.
Well, if you've listened to Beyond the Uniform for a while now, you've probably heard about different veterans talking about the power of meditation, gratitude, and different daily practices to increase their productivity, their focus, and overall satisfaction in their job and in personal life. My guest today is not a veteran, but Dr. Dan Libby has created the Veterans Yoga Project, which is an incredible and absolutely free resource for any veteran. So he's going to go through, I love this episode because he provides not just an explanation that's very accessible about gratitude and meditation and yoga, but we actually go through a handful of different exercises. So literally, while listening to today's episode, you can actually try some of these things out. And if you're interested, you can go to the Veterans Yoga Project website and find free resources that you can do virtually online, as well as in-person resources that you can do in your community. So as always, you'll find more resources at beyondtheuniform.io, show notes including links to everything we discussed today. So with that, let's dive into my interview with Dr. Dan Libby. Joining me today, normally based in Alameda, California, but today in, say San Antonio, Texas? Is Dr. Dan Libby. Dan, thanks so much for joining me and welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So I wanted to give a special thanks to Tim Avery for making the introduction. Tim is, was my 12th interview, and this is our 123rd, so quite a while back. But Tim introduced me to Dan, and I wanted to give people a quick background on Dan. So Dr. Dan Libby is the founder and the executive director of the Veterans Yoga Project. He's empowered veterans and their communities to access healing resources and find resilience both within themselves and through connection with others. He has also enabled yoga teachers and healthcare professionals to share these practices. He is a licensed clinical psychologist and holds a Bachelor's of Science in Psychology from the University of Montana and a Doctor of Philosophy Clinical Psychology from St. John's University. And so I guess maybe first to start things off, Dan, anything to add or amend to that bio?
No. Well, I'm sure there would be tons to add, but it seems pretty accurate to me.
Awesome. I'm wondering, what was the genesis of starting the Veterans Yoga Project?
Sure. I have to say it was never my intention to start the Veterans Yoga Project. I'm not a veteran. I never had any real particular interest in working with veterans. My grandfather was a vet and served in World War II in Korea, and my uncle was killed in action in a training accident when he was about 19, and I was just an infant at that point. But I never really had a real strong pull towards the veteran community until I started working with veterans at the West Haven VA as part of a postdoctoral fellowship that I did after I finished graduate school, and I was doing this postdoc through Yale and had this opportunity to work at the West Haven VA. Well, two things happened. One is when I first got there, there was a great yoga teacher who was teaching a new program that had just started on the outpatient PTSD clinic. And he's a great teacher. I've gone to his classes in the community, but he had no experience working with trauma or working with veterans. And this was specifically in a PTSD clinic. And unfortunately, the program, really didn't take off so well. shortly after that, I began teaching a yoga class. And the fourth class that one of my veterans came to, he came in and he said, "Hey, I stopped taking my sleep meds." He said, "Now I can meditate to go to sleep instead of medicate." And that
Wow.
exactly, wow. And that was the moment. And it just was like, yes, this actually does work. You know, part of my goal in going to this postdoc was to do some research to find out, like, is this, you know, could this be helpful for post-traumatic stress? And to get my answer sort of after four classes was very, I guess, influential on the path that I took. And so started teaching other yoga teachers a little bit about trauma and a little bit about resilience, a little bit about post-traumatic stress, military culture, and working with veterans. And since 2010, I've trained close to 1,000 yoga teachers and other health professionals in our mindful resilience training, which is sort of the basis for the work that we do, and it includes five tools. So a lot of people have a lot of different ideas about what yoga is. And there's a lot of different definitions, a lot of different lineages and branches and brands and definitions of yoga. But for us in this context, when we're talking about mindful resilience, it's about five tools that basically help us live in line with our values and goals. And so breathing practices, meditation, mindful movement, which is a little bit more like what people think of when they think of yoga, guided rest and yoga nidra practices, and then the fifth tool being gratitude. And in my experience, the veterans, just like the gentleman who came to that fourth class, in my experience over these past 7 years, I have found that the veterans I work with who practice these tools, they recover more quickly from trauma-related, you know, challenges. They're able to engage with their other mental health treatments more easily. And it really helps veterans move from post-traumatic stress through to post-traumatic growth. And even if you're not somebody who's dealing with post-traumatic stress, being able to have better self-mastery in the face of all of life's, you know, ordinary and extraordinary challenges. So that's a very long-winded way to answer your question about how this got started, but it was really based on that feedback that it worked with the veterans that I was working with.
This is great, and I would just chime in too. I think that this is, I think it's exceptional to see the work that you're doing, and I just want to highlight for people listening, you know, I mean, my background was submarines. I was not in combat. I would not consider myself to have PTSD. I still believe in everything you're saying, and I think that every single listener benefits from all of these things. And you know, with breath, with meditation, I think if you listen to Tim Ferriss or any popular podcast today, you know, like Tim Ferriss has interviewed hundreds of the most successful people on the planet, and in his book that he released called Tools of Titans, he talks about, I think, something like 80 or 90% of those people have a daily meditation practice and mindful movement. There's so much research around yoga and the benefits and the health benefits. So I want to make sure that even if you're listening and you haven't been in a situation that would be classified as PTSD, I think that there's so much to benefit from hearing what Dan has to say about this. And Dan, when I was trying to write down when you're saying that, you said breath, meditation, mindful movement, gratitude. I missed the fourth
The
one. What was the
fourth one
fourth
is
thing that you
guided
highlighted?
rest, which we normally do
Okay,
through a
guided
practice
rest.
called yoga nidra, which has become a pretty
Okay.
popular practice out there. It's one of my favorites because you don't have to do anything. You get to just lay there, and it's basically a guided meditation, a rotation of consciousness through your body. I've worked with countless vets who have sleep problems. So much like the gentleman who came to his fourth class and told me he stopped taking his sleep meds. He used meditation, but what I've gotten more feedback about is this guided meditation, yoga nidra, and there are lots of different forms of it. But in yoga, it's a practice that is actually supposed to be an awakening practice. But you do often practice it lying down on the floor, and inevitably, when I'm teaching, you hear at least one or two people start snoring. Because in general, and again, I don't think this is just for vets, but for most of us, we're not getting enough sleep. We're not getting enough rest. And we're overstimulated and we have too much to do. And then if you have on top of that, maybe some challenges with reintegration or traumatic stress or other things in your life, it really leads to this pattern where we don't get enough rest. And that has tremendous and profound effects on our body and our mind. And so taking just some time and a brief 25-minute practice. So I'm a scientist, so I don't really like to go out sort of making crazy claims. So let me preface this by saying, like, there's no research that shows this, but in the traditional yoga nidra books, they claim that a 25-minute yoga nidra practice gives you as much rest as 4 hours of sleep. Again, I haven't seen the research on
Well,
that, but what I can tell you is that I work with a lot of vets who can't get to sleep that use this either to get the rest that they're not getting, or it helps them fall asleep, or it helps them fall back to sleep after they wake up in the middle of the night.
I love that thought. I think we are all sleep deprived. I've done a couple of these like week long or more silent meditation retreats, and every single time, I think my experience and most of the people around me is that the first 2 or 3 days, you just start to notice how much fatigue you have. And when you separate out all, like you said, all that stimulation of phones and TV and internet and all this stuff, you take that all out and you start to realize, like, oh man, we're all just like constantly on the edge of exhaustion. And so I can imagine as people start to do this work, they do fall asleep in their class because they're just letting themselves really relax and
Yeah,
really
and which is
unwind a little
not
bit.
something we normally schedule in. I mean, if you look at sort of warrior cultures, right, the idea is that you want to be amped and ready to go and ready to sort of meet your mission and do what you have to do, but that's not sustainable. The physiology of the body can't just sustain a go, 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 go. You have to also take that time to rest. And that way, when you do go, 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 you can do so more effectively. And so most of the practices we do are not sort of what most mainstream people think of when they think of the word yoga, right? Very often we think of these very physical practices, right? Which is one of those five tools, which can be great. But focusing on these other four tools as a way to self-regulate, to be able to control my mind and control my body, and to have some feeling of comfort in my own skin, even in the midst of, life's challenges.
I love this, and I love the way that you've broken down the different aspects of your work. I'm wondering, could we actually zoom in just for a second on gratitude? And I'm wondering if there is something you could share about gratitude and why it's important for veterans. And I'm wondering if there's even like a practice or experiential component or something that we could actually do with gratitude to make it a little bit more concrete for someone
Sure.
listening.
So gratitude is one of those practices that I guess has been more effective than I had originally thought. And there are some, there's some good research showing that when you engage in a gratitude practice, and there are several things out there. They've done studies, for example, if you spend a few minutes writing down at night the things that you were grateful for today. Right, that leads to an increase in your psychological well-being, your general level of happiness, et cetera.
I do that. I've heard that. I was so skeptical, and I've heard that from so many different sources and so many different types of people, and heard about all these different research on it. That's literally something I've committed to recently, is every single day three writing down three things that I'm grateful for. And it seems like there's a tremendous body of research now that shows it's like a muscle that you build, and you start to use gratitude in that way. And I think that's great
And
that you're
from a
highlighting
just sort of
that.
a cognitive perspective, right? In some ways, and it's certainly possible for us to feel, many ways about one thing. And but if you can get in touch with that sensation and that feeling of gratitude, at least for that one moment, right? In that moment, you are not also simultaneously lacking something. And most of us sort of go around in our everyday life and we're lacking this and we need to do this and we're striving to get that. And when we take a moment to just appreciate what we do have. And even if it's, if you're having a crappy day and you can't really feel grateful for very much, right? I can feel grateful for, the person who built the chair that I'm sitting in, or the person who picked the blueberry that was in my yogurt this morning. You can usually find something, your favorite color, something to be grateful about. In that moment, you can't simultaneously be seeking something else. And there's other research showing gratitude, how it affects the autonomic nervous system. And again, I think all of these practices, if we drill down to what's actually happening with them, it is just a shift in your nervous system. And it's about just being able to connect the mind and the body and the breath via this system in your body that is designed to help you succeed and to live in line with your values and goals.
How would you? I'm also realizing as you say that, I'm just wondering if I'm not sure how familiar the average listener is with even the concept of meditation. And when you work with veterans, how do you explain what meditation is?
Maybe we can do a very quick little meditation practice right here. I'll invite you, Justin, to bring all of your attention right to the tips of your nostrils, right where the breath exits and enters the body. Right, you can do that. You can bring your attention there and notice the physical sensations, maybe. So I'm going to invite you just to maintain your attention on those sensations for maybe two breaths. That's meditation, right? Meditation is simply putting your attention where you want it to be and keeping your attention where you want it to be. If I asked you to continue to, right, any of us can do this, and this is, sort of the magic of these practices, is that it amazes me that any of us, I can ask anyone to bring your attention to a sensation or sound, and any of us can do it, but none of us can sustain our attention. Right, the nature of the mind is to wander, is to seek out, to attend to other stimuli in the environment. But the process of meditation is repeatedly bringing your attention back to where you want it to be. And I might notice a sound, I might get distracted by a thought, but I can bring my attention back. And so the analogy I use is a dog. Justin, do you have a dog, or have you ever had a pet dog?
Yeah, I've got a dog
Now,
Hemingway right here.
is Hemingway well trained?
His mother, my wife, thinks so. I sometimes differ on that. He's
Well,
okay.
the mind is just like a dog, right? And I often use the example of a dog that my roommate got once when I was in graduate school, and it was a wonderful little puppy, just the cutest, loveliest animal, and she didn't put any time into training him. And the dog became a nightmare. The dog crapped all over the place. It chewed up the furniture. It was really just sad. And that animal became a liability, right? It became something that was working against her owner, right? And a well-trained dog, on the other hand, right, is an asset to an owner, right? You can train a dog to give you comfort, to protect you, to go fetch a newspaper off the stoop. You can have that animal be either an asset or a liability. And I think the mind is very similar, that for many of us, it's our own minds that drive us crazy, that, give us distress and cause us anxiety. And many of the times you can say that it's because our mind hasn't been properly trained. And so each time you tell your mind to come back to focusing on the breath, for example, right? So if I'm focusing on the breath at the tips of the nostrils, in a minute or in a few seconds, I'll realize, oh, I've been distracted by a thought. I'll come back and notice the sensations. And then I'll get distracted again. And each time you get distracted and you bring your attention back, it's like saying, heel, right? And you're training your dog, heel, come by my side and be an asset. Now I can deploy my attention where I want it to be. So if I'm hanging out at home with my family, I can actually be in the moment and give my attention to my family instead of, being compelled to look at my iPhone or to look at this or, I'm having anxiety about this or that. And so the practice of meditation is about training your mind to be the best asset that it can be. Does that?
I love that definition because I think, and the examples, I think it makes it a lot more accessible. I think that a lot of times, people who aren't familiar with meditation, they can have a perspective on it that's maybe more spiritual or religious or off-putting to them in some way. And what I love about your explanation there, it really boils it down to the essence of, I think what you had said is it's bringing your attention back to where you want it to be. And I think that that's something that everyone listening to could relate to, because that's you can see how that could help you in your career, how that could help you in your relationships, how that can help you in just enjoying life. And I it makes me think of when I was in my earlier days of running my company Storybox, I literally drove to the office, went in, and then came back out at the end of a long day, and I couldn't find my keys. And someone had left a note on my car saying, like, "Hey, you had left your car running. I left your keys at this business across the street." And like, we can all get wrapped up like that. We can get so wrapped up in thinking about different things and where we're not even present, where you can literally leave a running car that for anyone to steal right in the parking lot. And so I love this thought of like you had said, you're training your mind just like you train a puppy. You're teaching it to heal and teaching it to just be wherever you are, whether that's with your parents or family, or whether you're driving or whether you're at work, really being able to set your attention on one specific thing rather than having it flitting about like a puppy running all over the place.
I think that's exactly it. I think we all are under more stress than we can be. That doesn't allow us. We all have certain values and goals, right? We wake up in the morning and we want to have a certain kind of day. We want to be a certain kind of person. But we're all human beings and we're all pretty fallible. And we very rarely live up to those expectations. And so, being able to at the same time, right? Part of meditation isn't just about controlling your attention, but it's also about accepting the fact that you can't control your attention and that we are biologically wired so that we are going to get distracted, because that's actually how the brain and the nervous system work. So it's sort of this paradoxical. At the same time, we're going to, bring our attention back and focus on the breath, for example, but also accept the fact and welcome the fact that we're. When we start to quiet down, when we start to slow the mind down, some of the things that we've been avoiding thinking about, or some of the feelings we've been avoiding, those can arise. And all of a sudden, you see those there. And so, if you don't also have the other half of that meditation experience, which was the acceptance, welcoming your experience, welcoming maybe unpleasant thoughts that arise, maybe it's uncomfortable memories. Whatever it is that arises when we start to be quiet and focus on the breath, we start to see what our thoughts are. We notice that they're just thoughts and that they come and go, and that we can welcome that experience without attaching to them. And then all of a sudden, those distressing thoughts, memories, et cetera, they don't have quite as much pull on you. And they're just sort of part of your experience, but they don't necessarily influence your next behavioral action. Your next behavioral action is still going to be in line with your values and goals, instead of being pulled and hooked to sort of compulsively act in a habitual way.
So I love a couple of the things that you're saying there. The first is this thought that we can't control our thoughts. And I forget who said it, but I love this quote that someone had told me where it's, we can't control the sea, but we can learn how to surf the waves. And what I take away from one of the things I take away from what you're saying is it's not about necessarily, forcing yourself to think about something, not about controlling something, but it's just understanding how each of our minds work and being more aware of that and being able to roll with those waves. And I also like this piece that you're talking about of, I often view it of having more choice in my life. And I think the more that I meditate, the more I realize how much of my life is on autopilot, and where it's literally I get a stimulus and I respond, and there's no choice in that. I'm just literally someone say, I'm driving, someone cuts me off, and like I'm like screaming at them. Like there's no, it's like an automatic knee-jerk reaction. And at least my experience has been like the more that I'm able to have a daily practice of meditating, the more I'm like at a starting point of like, the person cuts me off. And at least I start to recognize, like, oh man, I'm really angry right now. And then once I'm aware that I'm experiencing anger, I can choose maybe a smarter way to respond to that situation rather than this knee-jerk reaction of like cutting the guy off or honking or you know, being a jerk about it. I can choose like maybe there's a better way for me to respond that's going to make me happier, like maybe letting it go. And so I don't know if that matches what you're saying, but it's kind of this thought of like starting to recognize how much we're just responding and reacting to things and trying to develop a little bit more of a muscle to choose how we want
exactly
to respond.
But what I would argue is that that's a lot harder, a lot easier said than done. And that our nervous systems, again, are, and this is what's great about science, is we've learned how our bodies work. And we've learned that when that person cuts you off in traffic, right, your nervous system switches, right? Your ability to have more choice and to have freedom of choice is based on your physiology, right? The thoughts that you have available to you, the behaviors in your sort of repertoire are directly based on your physiology. So if your physiology is stuck in a sympathetic nervous system mode, meaning that you're in that fight or flight response, you're sort of high stress, you are going to have less of a thought behavior repertoire. You're going to have less choice, and you're going to be compelled to, you know, maybe cut that guy off in traffic, give him the finger, worse, run him off the road, you know, yell at your kids when you get home, whatever it is, however it is that you then behaviorally, instinctually, habitually express that frustration. I mean, it's a habitual thing and we're hardwired to do that. The key is that, you know, you want to have these meditation practices to bring your attention back and sort of accept things because that's going to help. But we actually have a more readily available and I would say a more effective tool that makes it more likely for us to stop and say, okay, well, I'm getting angry and maybe I shouldn't go, get revenge on that guy. And that very simply has to do with your breath. And that's why it's the first of our five tools. So when we breathe, right, I asked you a few minutes ago to pay attention to the sensations of your breath. What I'll ask you to do now is maybe take a few breaths, but maybe let your exhale be twice as long as your inhale. So, for example, maybe if we do it together, we can inhale for a count of inhale, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then you can exhale for a count of 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then you can do another one. Inhale. And then exhale twice as long as your inhale. And just a few rounds of that, and you may notice, but certainly your nervous system will start to change, and it'll shift from being sympathetically activated to being parasympathetically activated, which means it's more of your relaxation response, which means that it actually brings online the parts of your brain, the prefrontal cortex, and the sort of the midline structures that are needed for you to have control over your next action, so that your next action, even though like I cut you off, right, you could do something that, you know, to get back at him, but that's not going to be very good in the morning if you end up in jail or, you know, whatever happens when we react, it usually isn't a good outcome and it's not really what we really want to do. But when we extend that exhale and we shift the nervous system, that is what allows now the mental space to open up so I can choose a different response. And again, just breathing by extending the exhale is probably the simplest, sort of most basic tool to start to regulate your own nervous system.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think that's such a great tangible exercise. And even in those two breaths, I notice myself slowing down a little bit more, just kind of settling in, relaxing more. It's crazy to think what you can achieve with just just a few breaths. It's not like some massive undertaking, and it's something that's always available.
Yes, exactly. And you know, not to doubt the impact of, you know, Xanax or Valium or these other benzodiazepines and other drugs, but the truth is that we don't have to rely on those things for most situations. We can have our own toolbox that's in our own body and mind. And that this is what Veterans Yoga Project is about. This is what this whole thing is about, bringing these tools to people so that we can all be better versions of ourselves.
What other, And in the show notes for listeners, I'll have a link to the Veterans Yoga Project. I'll have links to the things we discussed. But I'm curious, what other resources would you want listeners to be aware of that they could find at the Veterans Yoga Project?
So if you are a veteran, currently we have 103 classes that we're tracking that are being taught at VAs, vet centers, YMCAs, on bases, student veteran organizations, American Legions, et cetera, that are free for vets and that are being taught by a yoga teacher who has been through our training program, one of our VYP teachers. Unfortunately, we don't cover the entire country. And so certainly you can always reach out to us and email us and say, hey, I need to find some resources in my particular area. But the best thing is to go to the website and to see if we have someone in that area. If we don't, we can often partner up with one of our sister organizations or reach out to some of our contacts and try to refer that veteran to someone locally. The other thing I would say is that on our website, we have a practice library. Which we are in the process of adding some new practices on there. But basically, you can go there and you can download or stream a 9-minute breathing practice or a 15-minute breathing practice or a meditation practice or the yoga nidra practice that I talked about earlier that's been so helpful for sleep. And then there's some movement practices there also. And so anyone can just go to veteransyogaproject.org/practice and access those resources if you don't sort of want to go to a yoga class, you don't have one near you. But then the third thing I would say is that give it a try, right? Go out into your community, find three different yoga classes from three different yoga teachers, and if you don't find one you like, then go to a fourth. But until you find a class, a community, a teacher, a yoga studio that that works for you, right? The yoga is such a wide field, right? There's so much happening with yoga, and you can go to some yoga classes and it's a competition about who can, you know, stretch their leg up the highest and get their head up their ass the furthest, you know. But a more practical yoga class is going to be not competitive. It's going to be about helping you focus on, you know, the breath in your body and the sensations in your own body so that you can learn and practice these tools to get in better touch with that most authentic part of yourself. So I would say go out there and try some classes in your community and reach out to us on the website.
And for listeners, I'll have links to the classes, the practice library, how you can contact them. I'm sure that in working with, you know, having trained 1,000 instructors now and all the work you've done with veterans, I'm wondering, are there any common objectives that you hear from veterans or common reasons that people that maybe people cite as being unwilling to give this a try or to experiment with this?
Sure. Yoga, the way yoga is presented in our culture is it's for tree hugging hippies. It's for, you know, young skinny girls in tights that are on the cover of Yoga Journal. But it's for those people, but it's actually for all of us. The practices that, you know, we teach are practices that warriors have used, you know, for millennia, right? To be able to have, you know, it's really about self-mastery. It's not about yoga, quote, yoga. I think there is a lot of that, right? There's just the stigma where, you know, yoga is just stretching or yoga is, the sort of converse of that is you get veterans to say, well, I'm not flexible enough to do yoga, which would be my argument for why you could go to yoga. Yoga is not really about stretching. It's about, you know, building strength, stability, and flexibility, both in mind and body. And so there are objections like that, you know, and that people just think that, especially that military culture tends to be a very male-dominated, masculine culture, and yoga is often seen as feminine, sort of on that side of the yin yang. And so that's probably the biggest sort of objection that people have to come up against. But pretty much if you have that one taste of a practice that makes you feel better, that helps you sleep, and you've been having trouble sleeping or pain. So we just did an analysis of over 1,200 visits by veterans to 8 different yoga classes that were happening at the Northport VA. In over 1,200 visits, veterans left the class in less pain, I want to say 82% of the time. And sometimes that's, 1 point on a 10-point scale. Sometimes that's 5 points on a 10-point scale. And so once a veteran feels better because they did this practice, any worries about, stigma or, impressions or whatever ideas they had about what yoga is sort of gets thrown out the door.
What about Veterans Gratitude Week? What would you
So
want
Veterans
listeners to know about
Gratitude
that?
Week is the event that we use to help fund and support our veterans classes. So I mentioned we have 103 classes that we're tracking. A lot of these are volunteers. Some of those classes we're paying for out of the money that we raise from grants or donations. Some of those classes, the teachers are being paid by other organizations. A few are even getting paid by the VA now. So Veterans Gratitude Week started out as 12 or 14 yoga teachers sitting around a bonfire wanting to do something to support the organization. And so they were all going to teach one donation-based class on Veterans Day. That started out as an idea with 14 teachers, and it has grown now. Last year, we had 425 classes across 46 states, where we had thousands of civilians and veterans just come together and do one yoga class and have gratitude for veterans be the theme and raise a little bit of awareness of, like, there are, most veterans don't have a major mental health condition, right? But a very large minority do have difficulties with reintegration, who are having really significant issues with traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress. And we want to raise awareness for the fact that, right, there's still, what's the latest statistics, 20 suicides a day. Like, that's outrageous. And so if we can get the community to be more aware of that, and to help actually, sort of put their money with where their mouth is and help support programs that are helping those veterans, then I think that's a wonderful thing. And it is. It's been a wonderful. We get a lot of just great stories back from yoga teachers, from veterans who may have gone to their first class through this event. It's going to be this year on November 3rd through 12th. And so, any yoga teachers out there in the audience or other businesses who want to get involved, it's really becoming quite an event. We just launched our campaign. I think we've already got 175 classes scheduled across 26 states as of what's today, September 28th, actually, as of yesterday. So our goal is to get up 500 classes across the country.
That's great. That's really incredible. I'm also curious if and I've already listed in the show notes the classes, the practice library, a link to the Veterans Gratitude Week. Is there any other resources you would recommend to someone listening if they're curious about this? That could be books or podcasts, or I don't even know what else might come to mind, but what else might be a resource for them to check out and take action on
If
this?
you want a great book that really gets into the neuroscience and sort of the experience of trauma in the body and how these sort of mind-body practices work, there's a book by Bessel van der Kolk called The Body Keeps the Score, which is just a profound work. And so that's one I would recommend. Other resources specifically about meditation. I mean, there's lots of great books out there. Any of the work by Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's I have a great book and CD by him and a few of his colleagues called The Mindful Way Out of Depression, that just sort of nice instructions on beginning mindfulness. I would say that there's so much out there, and to find get referrals from those and find out who in your local community is doing this kind of work, and try to find some practices that way as well.
This is great. Well, I always like to keep the last question more open-ended, and that's just, recognizing I've asked some specific questions I thought would help our listeners, but also there might be some things you want to talk about that we haven't covered already. So I'd love to just kind of yield the last couple minutes over to you to share any final words of wisdom or final thoughts with listeners.
Thank you. And thanks for having me on today. I love talking about this work. It's like I said at the beginning of the podcast, this is not anything I had ever intended to do, and yet it is the most rewarding work, and it's really sort of a life calling for me. And I have worked with hundreds of vets and active duty service members, and used their feedback to help tailor our program and help refine the way that we teach yoga teachers and we work with mental health professionals and clinicians to work with those who are dealing with, more significant mental health challenges. And then to be able to work with so many vets, and our organization is largely veteran, I mean, largely volunteer, but also largely veteran. Most of our board of directors, most of our key staff are phenomenal individuals that have a lot of skill, a lot of training. And partly why I love the work that I do is because I think the world is undergoing a lot of challenges right now, right? I mean, there's certainly a lot of issues that are happening now, and there's, natural disasters that, may only be getting worse. And if the world and our country is going to be strong and united and successful, and we're going to need the best among us to help lead the way. And I believe that through, the work that I've done the past 7 years, that veterans really are those people, right, that have the natural inclination towards service. And there's, cool research showing that veterans participate more in charitable activities. They give more to charities and nonprofits than civilians do. So these people who are already geared towards service have also the training and the experience to be able to lead and to be part of a team. And so my hope is that beyond, working with individuals to help them, be able to manage their anxiety when they go in for a job interview, or to manage, nightmares that they have from their traumatic experience. My real hope is that we will be able to do with this generation of veterans what we couldn't do or what we didn't do with the Vietnam era generation of veterans, and that is to give them all of the support that they need so that they can be the change makers that the world needs.
That's great. I mean, I really appreciate the work that you're doing and the effort you're having to make veterans more aware of this, and also making it a free and easily accessible resource for veterans anywhere. And for those listening, whether it's whether you're stationed overseas and you can only access the practice library that's on their website, or whether you're in an area where they offer a class, or if you reach out to them directly and ask for a recommendation of a studio in your area or a resource in your area that you can take advantage of. I think that Dan's done a great job of outlining lots of different things that are available to you. And my hope is that you take action on this, that you maybe are curious about one of the aspects that Dan talked about today and maybe check out a book that he recommended or one of those resources. But Dan, I really appreciate both your time today, but also the work that you're just doing for the
Well,
veteran
thank you
community
very
in
much. And
general.
can I maybe leave off because what I'd like to do is maybe just a quick little gratitude practice to end us off. And also just to put a
I'd
request
love
out
that.
there for any vets who are listening who do practice that have a meditation or yoga practice that maybe they get in touch with us and let us know how that practice has worked for them. And, tell us a little bit about your story. That's one of the other things that we'd like to do is really help understand and get the, perspective of our students, but from other people that have used these practices. So I'll invite you to reach out to us on our website with that. But maybe as we go out, we've done this meditative part where we bring our attention to somewhere we want to focus on, and using the breath to start to open up a little bit more space in our minds and our thoughts and our behaviors. And what I'll invite you to do now is to bring all of your attention right to the center of your chest. And if you'd like, in standard yoga classes, very often you press your palms together in a sort of prayer position right on top of, or right in front of your chest with your thumbs resting on your sternum. Or you could even just stack your hands face down into your chest, and that might help bring some awareness to any physical sensations that you might feel in this area of your body. So not trying to feel anything in particular at first, but just bring your attention to notice as you inhale and exhale all the different physical sensations that you might experience when you bring your attention to the center of your chest. And then I'll invite you to see if you can't conjure up a feeling of gratitude. And maybe just imagine what gratitude would feel like if it were a physical sensation in this part of your body. So imagine feeling very thankful and very grateful. And imagine that was a physical sensation living in this part of your body, right in the center of your chest. And just try to get in touch with that feeling of gratitude or the sensation of gratitude. And then from that place, or maybe it's just the thought of that place, I invite you just to silently acknowledge to yourself just one person in your life for whom you are grateful for today. Thank you very much, Justin, for having me on. I'm very grateful for the work that you're doing.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
Surface, surface, surface.
Thanks for listening. I hope you do check out the Veterans Yoga Project and Dan's work. If you like this interview format, definitely let me know. We'll do more interviews like this. If you haven't already, a positive review on iTunes would be greatly appreciated. If you know of any ways in which to get this resource in front of more veterans, trying to find ways to get Beyond the Uniform out to more active duty members of the armed forces and transition veterans to help them in their civilian career. And then lastly, if you haven't already signed up for our newsletter at beyondtheuniform.io/newsletter, definitely check that out. Doing more and more work with the newsletter now. Take care, have a great week, and we'll be back with more interviews with veterans about their civilian career next week.